I just got a new idea.
I got a really neat idea for a book I want to write.
No, it's a secret. It's a book that's never been written by anybody that I know of. Wow, if I could write this book, I would become famous. Not that I want to become famous, but I don't know why that never occurred to anybody before. Okay. You know, sometimes ideas occur to people that people have never thought of before. I was reading the newspaper today and it said this guy who lives in Holland, I think it was, or the Netherlands, he was a tailor and his wife was a seamstress, and she was cutting out these pieces of cloth, and he decided, boy, what we should do is just draw the shapes out on paper, and then you could just lay it on the material and cut them out one after another after another after another after another after another after another. And so he did that, and soon he became a millionaire, and his name was something like Howard Butterick. And that's Butterick Pattern Company today. Just decided to make a pattern out of paper. It's a good idea. Okay, the removal of the curse. Isaiah 11:6-9 says, and the cow and the bear, oh yes, then it says, and a little child shall lead them. The wolf and the lamb, the leopard and the kid, the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. Now, if a little child leads something around, it means in the sense of a pet. Now, you wouldn't have as a pet animal a lion, but in the millennium they will. And that's because their nature is changed somehow to where they're no longer killing and tearing and angry like they are today. I don't know why, but it wouldn't surprise me in the millennium that you could be walking down the street and you could see a little kid and he has a leash and he has a lion on it. You know, if I had more energy, I would demonstrate this. But, you know, you just see him running along, leading a lion, and there he goes, running down the road with his lion. It's weird, but that's what it says. Ryan? What happens? Does the lion get the candy bar?
No. The lion found a door and the boy looks around and that's the end of the commercial.
Oh. You mean the lion, is that true? The lion ate the boy, so the lion got the candy? Oh, you're just being funny. Oh, okay. Anyway, it says, listen to this part. This is Isaiah 11:6-9, verse 7. And the cow and the bear shall feed. Bears don't feed. Bears don't feed. You know, you've seen bears. I have only seen one bear live, other than in the zoo. And they're scary. The one I saw was kind of a small bear. Wasn't a big bear. I think if you saw a big bear, it probably would be pretty scary. This was real far away, and it was just a little bear, and it was just going along the edges of the hill. And so we just turned and ran to get away from it. But this says, the bear shall feed. I know I've seen bears in movies and on television getting salmon in the river in Alaska. You've probably seen that before, where they're standing in the middle of the river with their paw, and they swipe a salmon, and then the bear has one big salmon in his mouth, and he's swiping at another one. That's what they do. They don't feed. This says, the cow and the bear shall feed. So can you imagine seeing this cow pasture, and there's cows and bears? and, you know, half cows and half bears, and the bears are just standing out in the pasture like the cows, and every so often they just go down and eat a little grass, and, you know, you could stand there at the fence and watch the bears graze. Bears don't graze. This says they will. And the lion and their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. Lions are carnivores. Something happened so that it became what they call an herbivore. An herbivore means that it eats herbs or vegetables or plant growth. And the suckling child shall put his hand on the cockatrice den. Oh, the suckling child shall play in the hole of the asp, and the weaned child shall put his hand in the cockatrice den. Now, in their society, children suckled or were breastfed up until age 5, commonly. And so this would mean weaned child would be above the age of 5, suckling child would be 5 or below. Now, an asp is a very poisonous snake in the Middle East. And they do live in holes under the ground. You know, they live in little caverns they dig under the ground, and they have tunnels, and they pop their heads out of different holes. Well, this is an asp hole, and so the child is going to play on the hole of the asp. Undoubtedly, this means poisonous animals like this will no longer be poisonous. If the lions aren't dangerous and the bears aren't going to kill you, well, then the snake isn't either. You know, you put a little kid by a hole. Somebody tell me what happens. Automatically, they'll look down the hole, and they'll talk down the hole, and they'll put their hand down the hole, and they'll put a stick in the hole, and they'll throw dirt in the hole, and they'll talk in the hole, and they'll look down there and play and, you know, poke around and blow into it. And, you know, any kid will do that. This is a snake hole. Any second, the snake could pop up and kill the kid, except this just trying to tell you that it isn't dangerous for it to do. And so in the millennium, you could have a little kid literally play with an asp, because that snake will no longer be that way. It won't be poisonous. And so I can picture a little kid playing, talking down the little hole. You in there, you know? And the little snake... Here's the hole, and this little snake would just pop its head up, you know, look around and get down. And the little kid would look down in there, and the snake would come up again, and maybe he'd tap it or something and talk to it and play with it or poke it, and the snake would poke back, and they would play. Wouldn't be any danger to it at all. And then it says, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the cockatrice den. A cockatrice may refer to a scorpion. A scorpion is highly poisonous, and this says he puts his hand right on it. You would never do that today, but they're no longer poisonous. And then it gives the reason why. They, that is, these animals, wolves, lions, bears, asp, cockatrice, or scorpion, the poison and dangerous animals, shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. That is a remarkable prophecy to me. We say if it can be literal, it is. And if it can be literal, and I say it can be, then it is. There's really no reason a wolf can't lie down with a lamb in a time of world peace when the curse is removed and things are changed. No more thorns or thistles, poison is gone, and these animals' natures are changed to be in harmony with man. Isaiah 35:9, no lion shall be there, nor any ravenous beast shall go up thereon. Isaiah 65:25, the wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the bullock. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. We also have Romans 8:21-22. Because the creature itself shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and travaileth together until now. So I believe there will be a removal of the curse. The bondage of corruption over creation will be broken, and things will be better than they are now. Next, we have safety in the millennium. Now, by safety, I mean safety from accidents and from war. I think you'll find in the millennium protection, some type of supernatural work of God to preserve life and limb from injury and crippling diseases and things that ruin human life. You won't see this in the millennium. You'll see health and safety instead. Here are some scriptures that promise this good time. Isaiah 62:8-9. Jeremiah 23:6. In his days Judah shall be saved and Israel shall dwell safely. Jeremiah 32:27. Ezekiel 34:27-29. I have broken the bands of their yoke and delivered them out of the hand of those that serve themselves of them. And they shall be no more a prey to the heathen, neither shall the beast of the land devour them. But they shall dwell safely, and none shall make them afraid. For I will raise up unto them a plant of renown, and they shall be no more consumed with hunger in the land, neither shall they bear the shame of the heathen any more. See how good that is? It says, they're no more going to be a prey to the heathen. Joel 3:16-17. There shall no more strangers pass through her anymore. Now this means in the sense of war. Joel 3:16-17. So ye shall know that I am the Lord your God, and there shall no more strangers pass through her anymore. Those strangers are armies. It's an army of another country. They're strangers, and they're not going to pass through you anymore. One of the saddest things in the world, to me, is war. We have been spared war. Maybe some of you fought in Vietnam. Anybody fight in Vietnam here? Steve, you went to Vietnam? Willie did? See, you've been in it. Did you actually fight in Vietnam, or were you in the back lines, or what happened? Were you involved in any actual battles while you were there?
Oh, yeah. 24 hours a day.
Was your ship ever fired upon?
Yeah.
Whew. Ryan?
Because I have a friend that goes to church. He started losing a bit of land. He was humble, and sometimes he was one of the point men.
So he got shot at and shot back and was right in the middle of it. It's really sad to think of your city. You know, if you picture the block that you live on, your street, whatever street you live on, and you picture a big tank rolling down your road and army men all dressed in their fatigues with guns taking over the land and a new flag flying and everybody being under domination of some foreign power. You and I have been spared that, and we should be thankful for that. Because there are people on the earth today that have that happen, you know. Afghanistan right now is in a war. Russia is taking over their country. And within our own lifetime, Russia has conquered a number of places, like Czechoslovakia. It was free when you and I are born. Today, it's a communist state. They took it over in what, 1960 or something, where the tanks rolled right down through Prague and they conquered it. South America, Eastern Europe, and Indonesia, the Far East, where you have Vietnam and Korea and these other places, they've all seen war. And this is a promise against that. And it's saying there shall no more strangers pass through her anymore. I take that to be a promise of safety, because in the millennium, the Lord is not going to allow that. And people will live their entire lifetime free from the fear of war. It's sad to me that there is thermonuclear capability to destroy the world. And so worldly children who don't know the Word of God, some of them really fear that because they don't know the truth. I've read articles about children who literally have some psychoses about it. You know, they have real definite, damaging psychological fear of war and of being blown up in a thermonuclear destruction. The Bible does not teach this, that the whole world is going to blow up in a great war in that way. That won't happen. We have the assurance of Bible prophecy that that won't happen. But kids who aren't saved don't know that. Now that you're saved, and you teach your kids about that, you should explain that that to them. You should take some time and show them the prophecies in the Bible about the rapture, the tribulation, the second coming, and the millennium. And tell them that, you know, the truth is, we'll be caught up to meet the Lord in the air, and after we are gone, then you'll have a bad time on the earth with the battle of Armageddon and the second coming, and then Jesus will reign as king. And the world is not going to blow up that way. And so if they meet their little friends or other kids they talk to, they don't have to fear that particular thing. They may read about that later, you know, and they may hear about it on television or something. You need to calm that fear by giving them the truth from the Word. Zechariah 8:14-15. This one says, he's thought to do good unto them and protect them. Zechariah 9:8, and I will encamp about mine house because of the army, because of him that passes by, and because of them that returneth, and no oppressor shall pass through them any more, for now I have seen with mine eyes. Notice that he says, because of the army, because of him that passes by, and no oppressor shall pass through them any more. That's the same meaning that other scripture has. Armies will not be pouring through your city anymore. And Zechariah 14:10-11, which is another promise here. It says, there shall be no more utter destruction. Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. Now, along with this, see, I had some other scriptures that I wanted to give you that I don't have typed out. I'll just give them to you. Isaiah 4 to 8. Let's see. I guess that's the only other one I had. Okay.
In Isaiah 2:4, it's the one about they shall
learn war no more. Learn war no more, right. I think I have that scripture under a category of peace, so we'll run into that one in a minute. Longevity. L-O-N-G-E-V-I-T-A. That means long life. Longevity. Longevity refers to long human life. And the scripture that promises this is Isaiah 65:20-22. I believe that during the millennium, pre-flood conditions are restored so that people live hundreds of years like they used to before the days of Noah. When you look in the Bible, the oldest man lived before the flood. His name is Methuselah. He lived 969 years. No one ever lived 1,000 years. It's possible a person could live over 1,000 years during the millennium. And the reason is, if you were born right at the very beginning and you live through the entire 1,000 years, you have an extra segment called the little season afterward. So if you live through the whole thing and into the little season, potentially you could live over 1,000 years. No one knows whether anybody will or won't. The Bible doesn't say that. There still is death, though, and we'll read that in this passage. It says, there shall be no more thence an infant of days. Now we say that's a wonderful thing because people have children, and today the lives of many children are cut short by death. And so it is very common in a hospital, you know, every few days or every few weeks to say that there's an infant there that just lived 2 days. This one lived 8 days. This one lived 9 days. This one lived 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, 120 days. Not in the millennium. You won't have this infant death like you do today. There shall be no more thence an infant of days. Everybody's lives is always measured in years or decades or centuries. Your lives are not mentioned in measured in just days. And then it says, north shall there be an old man that hath not filled his days. For the child shall die 100 years old. But the sinner being 100 years old shall be accursed. Now if you picture this, say that you live to be 70 years old today. That would be common in America. And then somebody dies when they're age 7. That's 1/10 of an adult life. How sad do you feel, and how much compassion do you have upon a person who dies at age 7? You know, really at age 7, you really would feel sorry for a person like that. There should be pity in you toward a little 7-year-old having to die. You could say basically they missed out on most things in life. They hardly even knew what was going on, and they had to die, and they missed their whole human life, really. Well, in the millennium, if you're going to live 700 years and you die at age 100 or at age 70, it's the same thing. 70 and you die at 7, or 700 and you die at 70. It's still 1/10. So it says a child shall die at 100 years old. I guess the analogy here would be age 70 and you die at age 10 versus 700 and you die at age 100. If you die at 100, they only live 1/7 of their life. And so I really believe people in the millennium will call these people who died at age 100 children. They're just a child. Now, it doesn't mean that human beings will stay small and grow more slowly than they do now, so that by the time you are 100, you are only this tall, you know, and you still have little hands and you have a little squeaky voice, you know, and they say, how old are you? And the kid goes, you know, it doesn't mean that. It means they'll say, when did he die? And they'll say, last week. Why? Well, I don't know. There's something wrong with him, I guess. Well, he was only 100. Yeah, I know, 100. It's too bad, huh? Man, he missed out. 100. They'll feel like age 100, like you and I feel about somebody who dies at age 10. They'll feel like, man, he hardly even got to live. Everybody lives way longer than that. He missed all the joys that people have in the 300s and the 400s. You know, see, we say in your 20s and your 30s, they're going to say, you know, the best time of life is the 500s. Because in the 500s, and they'll be able to talk about what it's like, it's so different from what we have now. And so this guy not only missed out on the 500s, he missed out on the 400s and the 300s and the 200s. He missed out on like 500 years that he should have lived, because he only lived for 100 years. He'll be regarded as a child. And then it says, but the sinner being 100 years old shall be accursed. Now, I think you can know why that is. It's because the whole world is righteous. If you have everybody in the world really loving the Lord, everybody in the world totally set against sinfulness and wickedness and dishonesty, you're going to have a really hard time trying to live as a sinner. You can't have a good time living your life in sin in the millennium, because the Lord is ruling the whole world and everybody loves God. So whenever you try to do something wrong, you get caught. I can see how this guy can have a terrible complex. Some guy decides at age 10 that he is going to live a life of crime. He's got a terrible life. That is a cursed life in the millennium, because nobody steals. Nobody steals. They've refined the techniques of catching people who steal. The Lord has righteous judgment upon anybody who ever tries. Nobody would dare do such a thing. And then this guy wants to live his life that way. Everybody is against him, including his friends. And so the little kid goes, "Hey, you want to do this?" They say, "Are you kidding? I would never do that." And then they turn him in. Then he gets in trouble. Pretty soon, everything he does, he's getting caught. He wants to do this. People know the motives and intent of his heart, maybe, by the power of God. Maybe they have the gift of the word of knowledge. Every time he does something wrong, it's revealed and he gets caught. And he can't lie about it, because the Lord tells him that he's lying. And so, in this day, they go by truth. They don't go by whether you can get him off on some technicality. Because if the Spirit of the Lord reveals it to a judge, then he's convicted even if he says he didn't do it. Because they say, "Well, you did it because the Lord told me you did it." "But I didn't do it." "You're lying. You did it. That's just it. Guilty." He's stuck. Soon, he will learn he'll never get away with anything. Soon, he will feel like everybody is against him. Can you imagine a person that way? You know how you would feel? You'd feel like, everybody's against me. Nobody likes me. Everything I try to do, they don't like. Everything I try to do, they're always coming down to me. Everybody, how come everybody's critical of me? How come everybody is this way toward me? And they begin to blame other people around them instead of themselves. You're going to live a cursed life if you try to live that way. They can't worship the devil. There isn't any devil. He's bound. They can't worship demons. They can't have drugs. There aren't any drugs. Try to manufacture them, you get caught. They don't even have the raw materials anymore. They can't have pornography. There isn't any. They try to make their own or something, they'll get caught. Everything they try to do will blow up on them. It's a cursed life. Who knows what the Lord will do? It says, they shall be accursed. It might even mean it literally that God will put curses upon such people and they'll live their life with sicknesses or some type of judgments upon them. Now, continuing with longevity, it says, oh, by the way, it says, "For the child shall die an 100 years old." See the word die? That shows you that there is still death in the millennium. It's not that there's no death. I don't know the answer to that question. I suppose your body will be buried and your spirit will still go to paradise, because there are disembodied souls and spirits of the righteous dead who do not come with the Lord at the second coming. And undoubtedly they must remain in paradise in heaven until the great white throne judgment. Because at that time, all the unrighteous are raised, and all the righteous who were not previously raised were raised. So, I don't see any reason for them to come back somehow. I guess I'd have to say, yes, they go to be with paradise. They go to paradise and they remain there. Now it says, "They shall build houses and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands." This is kind of a unique thought. Picture this. You're going to live 800 years. Okay? So this says, "They shall build houses and inhabit them." That doesn't happen today. Today you build a house. In America, you only live there an average of 6 years, and then you move. In the millennium, they're going to build houses and live in them. It says they won't build and another dwell therein. You'll build for you to live there. Now, I suppose most people in America do little things to their homes. You know, Americans are known for this. They like to work on their home and make it better. You know, they panel a certain room, or they paint another room, or they put special carpeting in this room, or they put in bigger windows and skylights, and they save their money and they buy a hot tub and they try to do all this stuff to make their house nice. Well, in the millennium, you've got 800 years to make your house nice. So what you do in the millennium is you get a big loan. You get an 800-year mortgage. And so you get a lot of money. And you could pay it back long term. And because there's economic prosperity, the Bible teaches that everybody is blessed in the millennium. Financially, they're blessed. So I think people will be really happy and really satisfied. Longevity means you have 200 or 300 years to do projects on your home and make your home into what you really want it to be. You're going to have a beautiful home, comfortable home to live in. You don't buy a home, barely get it fixed up, die, and give it to your children. That's what happens today. Not in the millennium. You don't build and another inhabits. You live so long, you build and you inhabit it. And the same thing with the vineyards here. It says, they shall plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit or plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people. Here the Lord likens people to trees. You know what a tree is? We don't think of it in these terms, but it's really true. A tree is a perennial plant. You know, when you plant flowers, you have annuals and perennials. I know in my yard, I have perennial flowers along the edge of my house, but then I have annuals in flower boxes, so you have to dig them out and then every year buy new ones and plant them. And it's a big job, and I don't like to do it, but they look pretty, so you do it anyway. Trees are perennials. They just grow every year. They don't die out. They stay there, and they just grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. They continue their life for a long time. And that's what people are like, he says, in the millennium. They're just going to go and go and go and go and go and go and go. Live from year to year to year to year to year to year to year, like trees. In fact, trees are some of the oldest living things. If you were going to make an analogy for something that lived a long time, a tree is probably one of the best analogies you could make. I don't know of things that live for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years except trees. Can you think of anything that lives hundreds of years? I can't. Trees. What, those turtles? Yeah. Those great big turtles. Yeah, I've heard of that too. In fact, I was thinking about that as I was saying it. But I still don't think they live as long as trees. There are trees today that are over 1,000 years old and they're still living and still growing. And so I think the idea that the Lord uses a tree here is a real good analogy. Another scripture for longevity is Zechariah 8:3-5. This says, thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, there shall yet be old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for every age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. Now I'll just comment that when it says that someday there's going to be old men and old women dwelling in the streets of Jerusalem, we mean old. You know, we're talking really old. Now, if you think practically about living that long, there are certain things that you could do that you couldn't do now. For example, if you wanted to have children, you could live with your spouse for 100 years without having any children, and then have children in your 100s. Now, you'll find in the book of Genesis that a lot of people had kids after they were 100 years old. Now, I'm not telling you that they didn't have children before 100, but I'm telling you that after they were 100, they did. That's one possibility. Another one is learning. You probably would agree that you've learned more in the last 5 years than you did in all the years up till 5 years ago. That's how most people feel like. That's how I feel. I don't know about you, but it seems like I'm 34, so I would say from 29 to 34, I learned more in that 5 years than I did from 0 to 29. That's how I feel. I don't know, maybe you don't feel that way, but I do. And I think people will continue to be that way. It is said we use less than 10% of our brain power. Well, if you live for 800 years, maybe you'd use a little more of it. I don't know. Maybe not. I'm not sure how that works. Another thing is your relationship with the Lord. If you figure you could live for 800 years, I've found that the longer that I have a relationship with the Lord, the better it becomes and the more I learn what God's will is for my life. Wouldn't you say that you know the Lord better? You know what He's like better? And you've had more experiences with Him than you did when you were first saved? You also know what the Lord wants and what He doesn't want. You know His will better in your life than you did when you were first saved. And you've probably been saved less than 20 years. Anybody here been saved more than 20 years? Okay, well, you got saved when you were a little kid and been saved most of your life, Rochelle. Okay, well, imagine being saved 800 years. You'd have times. You could do this. You could say, in the millennium, I'm going to take 10 years off to seek God. And you could do that in the millennium. You probably would have enough economic prosperity to be able to do that. Wouldn't surprise me at all. If you lived 100s, 200s, 300s, you have 300 years to build up money. So you'd work for 300 years and you'd build up a lot of money and you could take 100 years off. You could take 100 years off to vacation. You could take 100 years off to seek the Lord. You could travel in the millennium because you live for so long that you probably could see most everywhere in the world. We don't do this in our lifetime. We are so limited. Now, if you include the idea, this is stretching your imagination a little bit, that in the millennium, technology will be increased until people can travel in outer space. You could go to the moon in the millennium. You certainly have enough time. Now, whether you would or not, I don't know. I think it would be neat to go to the moon. Don't you? You wouldn't go to the moon? How come? It's too scary because you might die and not come back. Well, it'd be like going on vacation, you know, just a 2-week tour of the moon. Just look around. You could do all kinds of fun things there. You could go on a spacesuit. What you do is you get out on a spacesuit and you could jump up and down for one thing. That would be fun. Because a 150-pound man weighs, what, 18 pounds on the moon? Something like that. And so, you know, they can jump up 10 or 12 feet or something on the moon. They had a guy, one of the astronauts, brought a golf ball, and he hit a golf ball on the moon. And it went a long way. I can't remember exactly how far it went or what the story was exactly, but you could do that. Now, I'm not saying they will. I'm not predicting people will go to the moon. It seems like to me they might have all kinds of unique things invented. And because people live so long, they'd be able to do things you and I can't do. Like I said, travel to every continent of the world. See both North Pole, South Pole. Now, if it's true that the Earth is tipped back up and everything is tropical, then, you know, maybe that wouldn't be that big of a deal. But I can expand my mind and see how people could do that. Now, if you turn it around, though, and you say you wanted to be evil and you lived for 600 or 700 years, you could become incredibly evil. You'd live for so long, you would learn how to be very evil. Probably more evil than anybody you and I are familiar with. Because criminals become increasingly evil and they learn how to get away with crimes and that kind of thing. Man, if you live for 500 years, you could really become an evil person. So the idea of longevity has a lot of facets to it. I'm just throwing out some ideas for you to maybe think about. Yes? Well, I've heard that theory. I've also heard the theory of just a transfer of material by mechanical means too. It wouldn't necessarily have to be God's power zapping people all over the earth, but you know, like on Star Trek where they beam people around. Well, it's possible that that technology could be invented and perfected, in which case people could be beamed all over the world. It's possible. The theory is that matter and energy are interchangeable. Now, I don't know if you could literally take a human being, transfer them into this other form, and then reassemble them in another location. Obviously, the technology does not exist to do that today. But if it's theoretically possible, maybe it's practically possible, and if it is, that would be the time it would be invented. I really believe that the Lord... See, the Bible says of Christ in Colossians 2, 2 and 3, in Him are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Proverbs 1, 7 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. 2 Samuel 2, 3 says, God is a God of knowledge. I think when Christ is king and everybody fears God, knowledge will be increased. In fact, the book of Daniel prophesies in the last days, knowledge will be increased. And the book of Proverbs teaches that men, I got a couple scriptures here. Proverbs 8:12, I, wisdom, find out the knowledge of witty inventions. Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. 1 Samuel 2:3, the Lord is the God of knowledge. Colossians 2:2 and 3, Christ in whom are hid all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Daniel 1:17, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. Daniel 12:4, in the last days knowledge shall be increased. It's possible that technology could really skyrocket in the millennium beyond what we have now. I know just in the last 20 years, technology has skyrocketed already. If it goes way beyond what we have now, things like that are possible. If you figured, say, we're just throwing this out now. This is not Bible theology. This is totally guessing. But let's assume that you could make travel, say air travel or this zapping, beaming travel, where you could go anywhere you wanted in the world for $100. You know, $100 round trip, beamed anywhere in the world. People would do that. You live 800 years? Oh, they'd be able to afford that. You could probably go to every continent every year if you wanted to. That's what I think. Be able to catch up? If they disassembled your body and then reassembled it? I don't know. But it seems like if they ever invented that kind of technology, you'd want to test it on dogs or something first. You know? To make sure that they... They probably do white mice first, and then dogs, and then monkeys, and then... Someday the first human being will try it. They what?
I don't think they're going to get around to me.
You don't? No, I don't either.
I'm not going to be a willing person.
Okay. The next characteristic is repopulation. This goes hand in hand with longevity. First of all, let me say that the Bible teaches that the population of the world is depleted before the millennium starts. Here are the arguments that show the world is depleted or the population is reduced. For instance, you have Zechariah 3:6. See, I'll have to read that one. Zechariah 3:6. I see a reduction in population first. Is it Zephaniah or Zechariah? Let me look. Zephaniah. Okay. This one says, I have cut off the nations, their towers are desolate. I made their streets waste that none passes by. Their cities are destroyed so that there is no man, that there is none inhabitant. See, the street is just empty. Nobody's walking down the street. Why? Because the population's all gone. That's why. In the city, it's just destroyed. There's no man there. There's no inhabitants there. They're gone. Why? Well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, the Bible teaches that 1/4 of the world population is wiped out. Revelation 6:8.
So let's draw this on the blackboard. 1/4 of the world's population is wiped out. Revelation 6:8. Now, if you do that, you would erase one of the squares. If you draw a square and divide it into four sections, 1/4 of them are gone, you've got 3/4 left. Now, this is the whole, this is 100%. So starting now, this would be 33, 33, and 33% for a total of 100.
Now, the Bible teaches next that 1/3 of those left are destroyed. That's Revelation 9, 15 to 18. So out of the whole that's left, 1/3 of them are killed, which would be one more box out of three. So the total reduction is 50%, okay, between those two scriptures from the original world population. Now, when you add to that all the people killed in the Battle of Armageddon, which is 5/6 of the army, I don't know how much now, and then you say, and all the Christians are killed, so you got a lot of other ones, and 2/3 of the Jews are killed, it wouldn't surprise me if you would have something like 1/4 left, or maybe even a little less than that, because you've got millions dying in Armageddon. Millions, I'm sure. And then all the Christians are killed. So there's a terrible depletion of population, according to the Word of God. Some scriptures on that would be Isaiah 10, 18 and 19. And shall consume the glory of his forest and of his fruitful field, both soul and body. And they shall be as when a standard bearer fainteth. And the rest of the trees of his forest shall be few that a child may write them. Now, writing them is a Hebraism. You and I would say count. We would say they're so few that a child can count them. They would say, in their way of speaking, a Hebraism, so that a child may write them. But it means the same thing. And notice that it says the people will be as when a standard bearer fainteth. Now, the best analogy that I know for this is those red-robed guards in England of the palace, you know, and they stand at the Tower of London and they have those red uniforms and those great big brown hats with bear fur on them, and they stand like this in big rows, and once in a while one of them faints. You ever seen that? What happens is they lock their knees and they tell them, do not lock your knees. You know how when you stand up, you can stand like this or you can go like this, lock your knee, and if you lock your knee, you'll faint. You stand there for hour after hour, eventually you'll faint. And every once in a while, tourists go over there and they take pictures of them at the Tower of London, and you know, they're all standing in a row, and then every once in a while one of them just goes, falls flat on his face. Well, that's what's happening here. He says, they shall be as when a standard bearer fainteth. See, what he's doing is likening men to trees. And he's saying, you look out in this forest, they're all like trees, they're men, and all of a sudden the men are going like this. Boom, 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 boom. And the trees are falling. And then he says, the rest of the trees of the forest shall be few so that a child may write them. In other words, by the time they're done falling, bam, 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 they're falling like a standard bearer, just boom, boom, like trees. That's at the Battle of Armageddon. When it's over, there's so few left standing, a child can go, one, two, three. You know, are there any more? Or, you know, there's not very many left. In other words, that's what's happening at the Battle of Armageddon. It's showing a depletion in population. Okay, let's stop there.